This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
A yeshiva in Telston for young men who are finding their way into the yeshiva system, and he assists them in that first stage of adjustment and preparing themselves to enter the mainstream of yeshivas. And we're happy to have him with us and wish him matzlocha in his work out here in South Africa. Week with a halacha, as is the style of most of the midrashim and dvorim. Halacha: Adam mi Yisrael sheyesh lo menayro sheatsuyo perokim perokim, ma'u letatelo b'shabbos. If a Jewish person has a menayro, a candelabra made up of many different parts, is he allowed to move it on Shabbos? Is it muktzah? Isn't it? Kach shon v'chachomim. The following was learnt by the Chachomim: Hamarkiv kenei menoro b'Shabbos chayiv chatos. If a person assembles the different parts of a menoro on Shabbos, that's an isur d'oraisa. He has to bring a korban chatos. It's prohibited. Umishumma mechayiv. On what basis is he chayiv? On what basis is such a thing prohibited? Omer Rabbi Avul b'shem Rabbi Yochanan: Hamarkiv es hamenoro b'Shabbos ke'odom sheboyne b'Shabbos. By assembling a menorah on Shabbos, one is performing an action similar to construction on Shabbos. And if one builds on Shabbos, one is chayiv. If one constructs on Shabbos, one is chayiv. That's the first part of the Midrash. Further on, the Midrash says, At sovur shemo l'raschon nosati l'chores ha-Shabbos. You might think that I've given you the Shabbos for negative purpose. That's not correct. I've given the Shabbos to you for your own good. I've not given it to you for any kind of negative reason, whatever. Why might I have thought that it was given to me for negative reasons? So many things are prohibited. It's a very constrictive day. It's a very restrictive day. All the things that we normally do, we're not allowed to do. But it's not only, in fact, what is it that leads out of that first halacha into the continuation of the Medrash? It's not only the difficult things that are forbidden on Shabbos. As we know, when we talk about melacha being forbidden on Shabbos, it doesn't just mean hard work. That would certainly be a pleasure. It's not that Hashem forbids us doing the hard work. Why, if it were that, then I would understand why it's for our good. But the Medrash says, you might think I've given you the Shabbos for your disadvantage, that it works against you, that you're restricted by the Shabbos. What is the restriction of Shabbos? If you can't even assemble a menorah, that restricts me not only in terms of the work that I can do, but that restricts me in terms of the job fulfillment that I can get. Putting a menorah together, taking parts, it's like doing a jigsaw puzzle. It's like taking different parts and finding the common thing and assembling it. That's something that's very fulfilling. Why shouldn't I be able to do that on Shabbos? We're not talking about a major construction process. We're talking about something very simple. And it's that simple thing on Shabbos that is forbidden. Umishu boyne b'Shabbos chayev. A person that constructs on Shabbos, a person that takes something, that takes parts and puts them together, irrespective of how difficult it is, That's also on Shabbos. One isn't allowed to do that on Shabbos. The common approach to work, to melacha, is that it's a curse that was given to us after the chet of Adam HaRishon, that it wasn't Hashem's original intention that we should work. Hashem's original intention was that man should sit in Gan Eden and he should learn Torah. That's all. And it was only after Adam's sin that Hashem said, "Bezeyas apecha toich halochem." Now you've got to start working for your food. But that isn't really true. Because before the chet of Adam Harishon, before man first sins, just after Hashem creates man, Hashem says the following to him: Pru uruvu, be fruitful and multiply, umilu es ha'oretz, and fill the land, v'kivshuha, and dominate it, urudu bidgas hayom, uva'if hashamayim, and rule over, govern the fish of the sea and the birds of the heavens, v'chol chayo haremeses al ha'oretz, and all the animals that roam across the world. What does that mean? Explains the Ramban. Interesting things that Ramban says here. Filling the world. Ulufi da'ati yavore chesom, says the Ramban, Hashem blesses them, she yimluis kol ha'oretz, that they should fill the entire world. V'yipordu agoyim lebishbechesom, bekitzvei sevel lerubam. And the different nations should diversify, they should separate themselves, they should spread out over the world. And they should not gather and concentrate in one place, like the people of the Dor HaPlogo, of the generation of the Tower of Babel, thought. That's not the intention. Hashem doesn't want everybody concentrated. He wants us to spread out. There's a big world out there, and He wants people to spread out, all the different nations, to take different parts of the world, and to develop those parts of the world. The Kipshua, and conquer it, says the Ramban, Noson lahem koach umensholo boretz. Hashem gave man the power and the authority in the world, la'asos kirtzoinon, to do as they please, bibahemos, with the animals, uvishrotzim, and the little insects, v'chol zeichalei offer, and all the materials of the earth, v'livnos, to build, v'lakur, and to uproot, Natoya, to plant, umeharareho lachatzev nechoshes, and to mine metals and minerals from the earth, uchayitze bezeh. This is before man sinned. It was Hashem's intention that people will work the animals, and they'll work the with all the resources of the earth, and they'll mine the earth, and they'll plant, and they'll gather, and they'll build, and they'll take down again. That was all His intention before the chet. So what changed when man sinned? And why was it necessary to do that? All that happened when man sinned, then there was a terrible klola, then there came the curse. And the curse was simply, things aren't going to go so easily, that's all. Since you listened to your wife and you ate from the tree, says Hashem to man, Aruro ho adomo ba'avurecho. The earth will become cursed. So it's the earth that is cursed, not the man so much. The earth becomes cursed. And it's going to be hard work for you to eat from the earth. Whereas things would have gone easily before, you would have planted and it would have come up and there wouldn't have been all of it. Now you have droughts and you plant one thing and you don't get as much as you expect from it. One year you do, one year you don't. There's a lot of labor, there's a lot of toil. There are weeds, you've got to weed, you've got to fertilize, all sorts of things that you wouldn't otherwise have had to do. Now you have to sweat for your bread. Whereas before it wouldn't have been with a physical sweat, but it would have been with mental sweat. There was no intention at any stage that man would sit under the trees and eat fruits. That sort of childish picture that we have of Gan Eden, that we learnt as little children in cheder or in nursery school, and that we somehow carry through our adult life, that wasn't what it was expected to be, of Adam sitting under the apple tree with his Gomorrah. That wasn't what it was meant to be. Man was meant to be active in the world right from the very beginning, to plant and to gather, to build and to take down again, to mine, to take out the minerals and the metals from the earth, and to purify them and manufacture with them and develop the earth. That was all before the sin of Adam Harishon. Which means that the development of the world was not the consequence of man's chet. The development of the world, this binyan ha'olam, developing the world, was an ideal intention. The Ribbono Shel Olam wanted people to do that. It's just He didn't want it to take physical labor. He thought it would only be mental labor. And the Supreme also says that. that Betzelem Elohim, says the Tzipurna, means the power of intellect.
Since man has the ability to develop his intellect,
that
if he doesn't develop his mind remains as it was initially, undeveloped. And then he says, what does the Kitshua mean? Conquer the earth?
Shetaginu besichlechem.
You'll use your intellects to protect yourselves from the animals of the earth, to make sure that they don't overcome you, to make sure that they stay outside of your territory, and you will rule over them with your minds. And govern them, rule over them with you'll net them in, and you'll find ways of gathering in the powers of the world, including the animal world, to get them to do your work. So the physical labor will be done by the animals. You'll use your intelligence to get the animals to do your labor. You won't have to toil physically. That was the original idea. You won't have to sweat physically. But to use your mind, yes. You'll apply your mind to protecting yourself from the elements. You'll build houses, you'll build cities. That's how you'll work it. You'll get the animals into areas, you'll tame the animals, you'll domesticate the animals. All that was intended right from the very beginning, which is very different from the way we were often taught to think, that really work is a terrible klala, it was never intended that man should work. You see, it's not so. Man is intended to work. Why? What is the intention of man working? We'll see as we go further. So back to our Midrash now. So the Midrash says, you might think I've given you Shabbos to constrict you and to restrict you, all the things that you're allowed to do during the week you're not allowed to do now. And they're good things, as we see, even before Adam sinned. I wanted you to work, but not on Shabbos. Shabbos would have existed even before the Chet of Adam HaRishon. Vayechulu HaShemayim comes before the Chet of Adam HaRishon in the Torah. It's true that in actual fact it was on that very day that Adam sinned. But before we're even told about Adam's sin, already we're told about Shabbos. That means that there was going to be a Shabbos irrespective. Whatever it was that we're meant to gain by working, we're not meant to do on Shabbos. So you might be restricted. There must be some benefit in your relationship with the world during the week, says the Medrash. No, I've given it to you l'tovoscho. I've given it to you for your good. Now, normally, if people will say to you, Shabbos is not for bad. When people teach you Shabbos, what do people say? Shabbos is not such a bad thing. It's true that you're not allowed to work and do all these things, but that gives you a chance to learn. That gives you a chance to understand the Torah. That gives you a chance to dedicate yourself to spiritual things. That's all right. That's all true. It just doesn't happen to be the way the Midrash goes. Look at what the Midrash says. And it's interesting how we sometimes lose sight of things in the Torah that are so important. Says the Midrash, Shabbos was given to you for your good. So imagine this Midrash here, Rabbi Chiya ben Rabbi Abba is talking, let's say, to a Baal Teshuva, to somebody who hasn't kept Shabbos before and is starting to learn about it. And this person says, but Rabbi Chiya, surely Shabbos, it's so restrictive. You can't even assemble a menorah, a little thing like that. You can't put together. And that's a mental exercise. That's not a physical exercise. It's not hard. Just to put the thing together, that gives one a sense of fulfillment. Even that I'm not allowed to do on Shabbos. Why is that? What is the restrictiveness then of Shabbos? It says, no, l'tovoscho, Shabbos is for your good. At mekadesh es haShabbos. Because you sanctify Shabbos. Now we'll expect to get all the Kabbalah, all the mysticism about how you sanctify Shabbos. The Meichel, you have a good meal. You eat. Uve Mishte, you drink. Uve Ksus Nekir, you put on beautiful clothes on Shabbos. Umahane Es Nafshecho, and you have a jolly good time on Shabbos. Don't say Shabbos is not given for your benefit. Rabbi Chiya doesn't say you sit and learn all the Shabbos, interestingly. He says you have a jolly good time also. You eat, you drink, you have a shalosh sudas, never mind one sudas, three sudas you have. You dress nicely, there are beautiful kelim on your table. I remember a long time ago, we were staying in a hotel for a Shabbos, and with goyim, it was difficult to organize things, and there was an African black man there. And I had to talk to him before about doing certain things, and this he could do, and that he could do, and then he brought us something to the room, and I couldn't sign for it. And he said, I don't know, what can you do today? You can't do anything today, he says to me. No, so we can't do anything. Couldn't understand. Then he came to me beaming the next day on Sunday. He said, I worked it out. He said, you can't work, and you can't write, and you can't put the lights on. All you can do on your Sabbath is eat and drink and be happy. He said, good, shaker, you worked it out. That's his understanding. That's his understanding of Shabbos as I know. Okay, but he happened to be mechazen to a chazal without even realizing. He was quoting a medrash, and I was here, but I've given it to you for your good. But the best part of it all, says the medrash, with that which that black man couldn't possibly be expected to understand, and you get reward for it too. That's the amazing thing. Not that I'm allowing you to eat and drink on Shabbos and have a good time. I love it when you have a good time on Shabbos, says the Ribbono Shel Olam. And I pay you for it. That's your job on Shabbos. That's what you're supposed to be doing on Shabbos. It's a different kind of attitude to Shabbos. I'm not suggesting, Chas v'Shalom, that we shouldn't daven on Shabbos, and that we shouldn't learn on Shabbos as well, and that we shouldn't do all the spiritual things that we need to do on Shabbos. But let's not lose sight of the fact that the Einag Shabbos that the Torah talks about is the Einag Shabbos in the simplest of terms, of enjoying, of having good company, good food, good wine, good and good clothing, beautiful table laid out. That's the true Einag Shabbos. Let's not move that. Let's not lose sight of that. That's the real Einag Shabbos. Minayin, as it says, v'koroso l'Shabbos Einag. Yeshaya says you shall refer to Shabbos as Oneg. Oneg, that's what it is. Moksi v'acharov, as tisaneg al Hashem, v'yiten l'chol mishalos libecha. As a result of having that pleasure on Shabbos, Hashem will give you the desires of your heart. You're fulfilling a mitzvah. So we see two sides to Shabbos. On the one hand, there are a whole lot of things we're not allowed to do. On the other hand, there are a whole lot of things we're supposed to be doing. But very different to the way we normally think about Shabbos, and certainly the way we normally think about life. The things you're not allowed to do are things which are mentally fulfilling, never mind the physically fulfilling. And that's the essence of Shabbos. That there is no restriction on physical labor, strictly speaking. As many have said already, you can carry furniture around your house. You can have an enormous house. And you can have... where's Ron at Loskop? What's the size of the area of Loskop? If we take the big Eruvin, about how many? About 14 kilometers. Circumference? The circumference is 7. So imagine an area that where we'll be next Shabbos at the Shabbaton. Those of you who haven't booked, I'm sorry, we're full already, there's nothing we can do, but those of you who have booked will join us there. 14 kilometers circumference. And if Ronnie wanted to be nasty to us, he could give us all crates of cutlery and crockery, and they're awfully heavy. And if he wasn't all that well organized, that's what he would be doing. But you know how it goes there at the Shabbaton with Ronnie and Stan organized. It's like Malochim over there. Wherever you go, everything's ready before you get there. You don't even have a moment. One forgets even to be mispalel, because you daven when you're missing something. When you're a little hungry, you daven. When something's not going right, you daven. Sometimes when things are going too well, you forget to daven. And that's how it is at these Shabbatons. Things just go too well. There's just nothing missing. But imagine if it wasn't so well organized, and he gave us these big crates of crockery and cutlery to schlep around, 14 kilometers circumference, we could do it. There's an Eruv there. There's no halacha that says you can't do it. But to carry a pin across Lubyanka Avenue, you can't do. To put together the chulios of a menorah, to assemble a menorah, that you can't do. So clearly the prohibitions of Shabbos have absolutely nothing to do with physical labor. Not at all. On the contrary, it's malacha, it's intelligent labor, it's meleches machsheves. It's intelligent labor that is forbidden on Shabbos. So look at Shabbos, our holiest day. Intelligent labor is forbidden, and what do you have to do? As the black man said, eat and drink and have wine and dress up nicely and have a good time. Doesn't sound like Yiddishkeit exactly. It sounds like doesn't sound like any religion at all. But that's what it is. That's part of what Shabbos is. our relationship with the physical world is what's being dealt with here. Further on in this week's Sedra, it says, you must remember the entire way that Hashem led you these 40 years in the desert. Leman anoyischo, he gave you a hard time, he troubled you. Lenasoischo, to try you, to test you. Lodas es asher b'levavcho, to know what's truly in your heart. Hatishmo mitzvosovim lo, are you going to keep the mitzvahs or not? And he's testing it not only for now, he's testing it l'dorei doros, for all the time to come as well. Does Klal Yisrael have the capacity to keep the mitzvahs or not? How does he test us that way? In the desert, do we have the capacity? How does he know from the desert that we have the capacity to keep the mitzvahs? Explains the Ramban. Ki hoyo nisoyon godolohem. This was a great nisoyon, it was a great test. They didn't know what was happening. And they went into this enormous desert, where there was no food. And they didn't have mon when they went into the desert. We know the end of the story, so it's okay. But you've got to, when you learn through the Torah, you've got to put yourself into their situation without knowing the end of the story. Just going into this desert without anything. Aval yorod. Dova yom b'yom, then the mon came every day, just what you need. The cham hashemish v'namis, and the sun warmed up, and the mon got melted. Just imagine a situation like that today, that you work, you get paid, and the next morning your cash just disappears, like in South Africa. And then you have to start again. Next morning you have to start again, and you start working again, and you just manage. And if you can use your money quickly enough, you can still buy something with it. If you wait 24 hours, its value has disappeared. You can't do anything with it. It's melted, gone. It's like the moon. Vayiravu elov ma'od, and so they got very hungry. The cholze asu lishmo mitzvahs Hashem. So why did they do it? Why did they put themselves into a situation where they couldn't see any kind of material future at all? Laleches kashi yitzaveh, to go. They did it in order to keep Hashem's mitzvah. Hashem said so, they do it. Hashem oyo yochol hilichom b'derech ha'orim asher sviv haseim. Hashem could have taken them along the urban route. There were cities all the way. Hashem could have taken them through the cities where they could have bought food. They had money. He took them through the desert where their money was useless, where there was nothing that they could buy. Aval hiviyom b'nisoyon hazeh, he brought them into this trial. Because through this it will become clear that they will always keep the mitzvahs. As we discussed in the ladies' shiur this morning, that the human being is able to draw not only on his own experience, that of course he can draw on his experience, and he needs to learn how to draw on his experience. But as Freud discovered, he can draw even on his subconscious experience. He can draw even on experiences he doesn't remember. He can draw even on experiences that took place when he was very, very young that he can't recall at all. But the Torah says you can go further than that, and you can draw on experiences of your national experiences. You can draw on the experiences of your forefathers. One has a national consciousness from which one can draw, that one can utilize, that one can focus on. And says the Ramban, it was this desert experience, this midbar experience, that gave us the capacity to be able to do the mitzvahs forever. Why does that mean? Why do we need this unbelievable experience to know sheyishmeru mitzvahs of leolam, that will keep the mitzvahs forever? Let's go a little bit further in the Torah. Vayancho, and Hashem pressurized you. Vayar ivecho, and He made you hungry. Vayachilcho es hamon asher lo yodato, and He gave you this unknown food called mon. You'd never seen it before. Velo yodun avisecho, and your parents didn't know it. Leman hodiacho, to teach you. Ki lo al halechem levado yichyeh ha'odom, ki al kol moitzo fi Hashem yichyeh ha'odom. That people don't live only by bread, but by anything that comes out of Hashem's mouth. Which the Targum translates as kol ma de isperei al memre de Hashem chaya ba'anusho. A man lives by anything that's created by Hashem, not just by bread. What does that mean? That means that what's nourishing you is not the nutritional qualities of the food. Okay, you need to make quite a shift in understanding here. What's nourishing you is not the nutritional qualities of the food. It's not the proteins, and it's not the carbohydrates, and it's not the vitamins, and it's not none of that at all. That's not what's nourishing you. What's nourishing you is that in every morsel of food, there is a spiritual element that was created by the Rabbeinu Shalom. And that's what's nourishing you. So if you wanted to chew a piece of wood, it would work just as well, theoretically. Anything created by Hashem. What you're eating is the main Rabbi Hashem, so to say. You're consuming that which was created by the Rabbeinu Shalom, that aspect of His creation. Anything that comes as a result, a creation, a product of Hashem, that's what's nourishing you. It's the product of Hashem that's nourishing you. There's a wonderful and a very difficult piece of Rebbe Yedesla where he explains the following. He goes through three levels, three stages. The first stage is, he says, imagine a person looking through a keyhole and seeing somebody sitting at a table writing. But he can't see the person, nor can he see the hand. All he can see is the pen and paper. Looks through the keyholes, he sees a pen writing. What does he think to himself? And imagine he can read what the pen is writing. And imagine the pen was writing a Shakespeare sonnet. And now he goes away and he starts developing a scientific theory. The person has never seen a pen before, never seen writing before. He's now going to develop a scientific theory as to how this pen is writing. Imagine what kind of theories he would come up with. The pen. The beauty of the pen, the enormous intelligence of the pen, what a pen can do, the power of a pen, if one could only find such an instrument. Look what it can write. Look what beauty it can produce. Imagine his whole vision of the world, and of the world of writing, and what a pen is. And whenever he saw writing, he would think, ah, what a brilliant pen. Look at this writing. And look at this writing, and compare this pen to that pen. So you go right through. All that would be the maximum of his understanding of how the writing came to be. A pen. Who wrote this? A pen wrote it. How do you know? Because I've seen pens writing. I've seen it actually happen with my own eyes. I actually saw a pen writing a Shakespeare sonnet. I know it for sure. He doesn't realize that he's only seen part of the picture. I remember when we were doing that research on the that I've spoken to you about, and we'll speak more about it next Shabbos, that research on the impact of cultural diversity on ethics. And I was busy interpreting the results of this, and we'd had 1500 complex questionnaires, 100 questions to each questionnaire, so that you can work out now how many answers we had to analyze, and we had to start picking up with computer programs, common trends and so on. It was quite complicated. And there was one group, one cultural group, it was in fact the Tswana people, that just didn't fit into anything. Everything was wrong, just totally wrong. And I started working on this because this was fascinating to me. And I started doing research about the Tswana people, and I started reading up on the Tswana people, and I started speaking to Tswana people. And I developed a theory explaining their peculiar responses to all the questions about their ethics and their culture and their tradition and why they think that way. It was beautiful. And I tried it on some sociologists, they went mad. I tried it on some social anthropologists, they went out of their minds. I tried it on a few psychologists, they wanted to write it up right away. And I was getting very excited, and then I sat down with a statistician, and he says, no, it's not possible. I said, what's not possible? He says, I'm not interested in your theory. The results can't be right. I said, the only reason you're saying the results can't be right is because they seem absurd. But listen to my theory and you'll see the logic. He says, I don't understand your theory. I'm just a simple statistician, and I know the statistics are wrong. I said, they can't be wrong. They're all in front of you here, and you produced them. He says, I'm telling you they're wrong. I said, well, find out what's wrong. He said, bring me the questionnaire. And he looked at the questionnaire. Eventually he found out that the translator had phrased each question in the negative instead of the positive, in the translation of the question to Tswana. So there went my whole theory. What could you do? If you know part of the story, it's easy to build the theory. And that's what scientists have done, and what in each profession what people have done. They've built theories on part of the story. And the theories are magnificent. The theories are unbelievable. They're just not always quite right, because they sometimes exclude some of the facts. It's a theory built on a keyhole vision. But when you really see what's happening, then you realize the pen's not writing, the pen's just an instrument. So says Rabbi Elia Dessler, when you're busy understanding our relationship with our work and our relationship with our parnoso, some people can only see the pen. What brings the income? The work brings the income. Some people realize that working is just the pen. It's the Ribbono Shel Olam that brings the income. It's just, that's the means. You can't write a Shakespeare sonnet without a pen or a quill or a typewriter or a computer. You can't write. You need an instrument. But it's not the instrument that's writing, it's the person that's writing. So it is, when you're working for a living, you need to work, otherwise it doesn't come. But it's not your work that's producing your income, it's the Ribbono Shel Olam that's producing your income. Those two levels are relatively easy to understand. But there's a third level that's a little more complex. And that is, he says, so why does Hashem want us to go through these natural methods? Why does Hashem put nature between himself and us? Between himself and the results. Person is ill, he must call the doctor. The doctor must prescribe a medicine. And the medicine takes his course. And the doctor says, this is what's wrong with you, this is the medicine, you'll take the medicine, and in 4 days' time you'll start feeling better, and in 7 days' time it will be over. That's what doctors usually say. And they're usually right. And it has to go that way. If you don't take the medicine, you don't get better. Why does Hashem want it to go that way? To make it not so easy to believe that it's the Ribbono Shel Olam. Because if when you got sick, it wasn't the doctor that said that, but if it was a heavenly voice that came along and said, I am the Lord your God, hear you, go and take such and such a medicine, take it once a day, and in 4 days you'll feel better, and in 7 days it will be over, you would never talk a word of Lashon Hara again. And if the heavenly voice said, and one word of Lashon Hara from you, and you'll never get better, every day you'll get worse and you'll be dead in a month, we would never speak a word of Lashon Hara, we would never do anything wrong, we would never question the Ribbono Shel Olam. He doesn't want us to operate that way. He wants us to have the freedom to be able to make our own choices, and in order to do that, we have to see the world as if it's functioning naturally. As if we're Balabatim, as if we're running the place, as if the pen's doing its own writing. That's how Hashem does it. So Hashem has instituted a program to give us the opportunity to think that the world is programmed, and that Hashem's left the world to the program, and that he's not involved. Give us that opportunity to think. Just like if you want to catch somebody out, you tell a kid you mustn't take any sweets over there, and you want to see if the kid really has the strength of character to be able to withstand the temptation, you go and you hide behind the door and you watch to see what he does. So the Ribbono Shel Olam sets the world up and then takes a back seat to see what we do with it. How do we understand it? How do we interpret it? How do we use it? How do we relate to it? That's part of how he functions with us. Fine. But in that case, says Rabbi Elia Dessler, nature is in fact distracting us from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Nature is in fact removing us from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Nature is in fact diminishing the impact of God's presence in the world. It's true, it's the instrument. But it would be much greater if there weren't an instrument. Just as Hashem got angry with Moshe for hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock. And both ways is a miracle. If you tried hitting a rock, see how much water you get out of it. What's the big deal? So you hit the rock. Who's going to think that it's not a miracle? Of course it's a miracle. It just would have been a greater kavod Shem Shemayim if he wouldn't have hit the rock, if he would have just talked to the rock. So it would be a much greater kavod Shem Shemayim if we wouldn't have to work. If we needed some food, we could just shout out, Ribbono Shel Olam, please, we need a steak and chips right now. Yeah, Ribbono Shel Olam comes, he has a steak and chips. That would be a much easier relationship with Ribbono Shel Olam. There would be much more kavod Shem Shemayim that way. But we have to go and make it seem as if it's all natural. That distances Hashem and that diminishes Hashem. In that case, says the Rabbi Elia Dessler, very mathematically, if our income comes from God, and if nature, in fact, is a diminishment of God's presence, then the worst thing we could be doing for our income is doing things naturally. Now we can take it a step further, and we can say, not only just with earning our living, but take it even with food. What are we living by? Mon wasn't a physical thing. Mon was a spiritual thing. Mon wasn't physical food. And so we're told in the Torah now, Hashem gave us the mon to teach us. Ki lo alechem levado yichyeh adam, ki al kol meitzo pi Hashem yichyeh adam. That man lives by Hashem's word. Man isn't living by things, man is living by Hashem's word. That's what it is. In that case, the eating of physical food is actually diminishing our understanding of that principle. Because it leads us to believe that it's the nourishment of the food that's giving us the living. It's the nourishment of the food that's nourishing us. So it's actually distancing us. So it comes out, he says, But not only is nature, in a sense, not the instrument of God, but it's actually, although it appears constructive in the spiritual process, it's really destructive. There would be more spirituality without nature than with nature. Which means that if we're trying to get Hashem's input, and if that's what we live by, Hashem's spiritual input, we should abandon nature, theoretically. That's what he proposes. And in fact, we have to realize, therefore, that the reason we go through this whole natural process is because that's what Hashem wants. And so if we go back to these three levels, he says the first level is where you think it's the pen that's doing it all, and that's apikursis. The person thinks there's no God. All my, whatever I do is koichi v'otsem yodi, is the Torah says. All my own ability. No Hashem. That's where you think the pen is writing. The next level is where you think that nature is part of mishpat. Mishpat are logical things that you need to do. There's a logical cause and effect, and by doing certain things you get certain results, and Hashem has told us to do that in order to get that. That's very logical. Hashem says, you want to dig a hole, take a shovel, put it into the earth, and dig. Otherwise you're not going to get the hole. So it's a mishpat, it's a logical process of cause and effect. You want to earn a living, you've got to take something, manufacture it, sell it at a profit, and you can earn a living. That's how you do it. But there's another level of understanding nature, and that's as a chok. That is, it's not natural that there should be nature even. The most natural state would be the exclusion of nature. The imposition of nature between us and the consequence of our actions. That's in fact a chok. Hashem has imposed that, and it's not natural, it's not logical. That's the interesting thing. If you really look at the world from God's point of view, nature isn't logical at all. Nature is an artificial logic that God has put in the world so as to make us feel as if things happen naturally. Let's go back to our essential issues. What is our relationship then with the material world around us? It emerges that there is something spiritual in everything physical, and it is that spirituality that's nourishing us, not the physical things. We're not being nourished by the physical things, we're being nourished by the spiritual things. What do we find those spiritual things in? Do we find spiritual things in consumption, or do we find spiritual things in production? That's what we have to look at. If it's just physical things that are nourishing us, then the only way you can be nourished is by consumption. But if it's spiritual things that are nourishing us, who says there has to be consumption? You can get spiritual things from production. By taking the parts of a menorah and putting it together, there's a certain spiritual fulfillment. And the fact is, we see there is an impact on the health of people of inadequate job fulfillment. If people aren't doing things that they feel are constructive, that they feel are purposeful, it impacts on their health. So that people's health, never mind their wealth, people's health is nourished by something spiritual in their work, not only by the physical, on the simplest of levels. That in their activity, it's what they're producing that nourishes them, just as much as what they're consuming. We've often discussed the importance of self-esteem and how that nourishes a person, and what happens to a person who doesn't have self-esteem. And one of the ways he builds self-esteem is by putting a menorah together, by taking all sorts of different pieces and being able to put it together and say, oh, look what I did, look what I was able to make. And that's what we're doing in our work all the time. That's what the entrepreneur does. He takes something from here and something from there, and he uses his seichel, and he takes an opportunity and he puts it together, and he creates something out of it, something that has a greater value than all the parts did by themselves, and he feels very good. And when a customer comes along and says, oh, that's just what I want, and I'm willing to pay you for it, he feels even better. He's done something worthwhile. He's done something which is valued. So that our spiritual nourishment doesn't only come from consuming the fruits of our labors. Our spiritual nourishment comes from the labor itself. And therefore we understand why Hashem intended man to work on the world. To plant and to reap and to harvest and to pull things out and to build buildings and to mine materials and metals and minerals. He wanted us to do that. Because that's part of what man needs in order to build himself up. That's how Hashem created the nature of the world. That we would be able to extract the spirituality from the physical world. Because the spirituality is extracted not from the consumption, but from the production of the physical world. That's where man gets his spirituality from. What about Shabbos? Shabbos things reverse. Shabbos we say, forget that kind of spirituality. Forget that kind of spirituality. On Shabbos our spirituality comes from the Torah. On Shabbos our spirituality, and we take some of that through with us during the week, obviously, as well. We get spirituality during the week also from Torah. But on Shabbos, all of our spiritual input, all of our spiritual nourishment comes from Torah. That's where it comes from. And that's why Beis Shammai says, for example, that you can fulfill the mitzvah of Shalosh Shudas with Torah. You don't even have to eat. Our nourishment, all our spiritual nourishment, this ki al kol motzah pi Hashem yichye ha'odom, we put into exclusive effect on Shabbos. Our nourishment on Shabbos comes from spiritual things and not from the spiritual that is in the physical. It comes from the spiritual of the spiritual, from Torah and from Avodah and from davening, from Tefillah. That's where our spiritual input comes from Shabbos. We don't put any menorahs together, no entrepreneurship, we don't write Shakespearean sonnets, we don't do all those things that give us self-esteem and fulfillment during the week. All of that we can't do on Shabbos. So where does our self-esteem come from on Shabbos? From the conversation that we have, from the Torah that we learn, from the ideas that we share with one another. That's where our self-esteem comes from, Shabbos. So what do we need the physical world for on Shabbos? Not even to nourish us. If the purpose was nourishment, we wouldn't have to have the kind of meals that Hashem requires us. Why would we have to have wine with our meals? And the din of Kiddush is not just to make Kiddush. The Rambam paskens that you've got to make Kiddush even for Shalosh Shudas, because you've got to have wine at the meal. The meal is not one of nourishment. The meal is one of oinek, one of hedonistic pleasure. Unbelievable. It's not that you've got to have three meals to be nourished. We're nourished enough. It's fine. Three meals on a Shabbos, on a winter's day. You know what that is, to have Shalosh Shudas. People battle here in Shul to have Shalosh Shudas. It's a mesiras nefesh to actually eat Shalosh Shudas sometimes. You've had a big lunch, you've had a kiddush, and a big lunch, and then you come back to Shul for Shalosh Shudas. What does the Rebbeinu Shlomo want from us? Is he worried that we're thin? Is he worried that we're undernourished? It's not for nourishment. The nourishment of Shabbos comes from Al Kol Motzah Pi Hashem Yichye Ha'odom. And yet Hashem doesn't detach us from the physical world. There's an element of oinek. There's an element of being able to draw something from the physical world, which is just the pleasure that we're able to sustain from it. And the role of that pleasure we discussed last Shabbos, last Motzah Shabbos in part. And that is that we mustn't think that the ecstasy we get from physical pleasures is just the Yetzirah. The concept of ecstasy is something very spiritual. The concept of pleasure is something very spiritual. The concept of true, deep happiness is something very spiritual. But we're meant to get that through our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. As we discussed last week, unless we have developed that capacity to be able to enjoy ourselves, there's no way we can enjoy the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's a very important capacity to have. Of course it has to be within the frameworks of halacha. Of course it has to be within the proportions of the Torah. These things are all governed to some degree. These things are all put into frameworks and into constructs. But within those frameworks, the Jew has to develop the capacity to have a nice time, to be able to enjoy a good glass of wine, to be able to enjoy a su'uda, to find oneg in these things that we do on Shabbos, b'maychol, u'v'mishte, u'v'ksus nekiyo, to enjoy putting on nice Shabbos clothes, to enjoy sitting at a beautiful Shabbos table, to have beautiful cutlery and crockery on the table, to have beautiful glassware on the table, and to be able to look at the table and have nachas from it. To be able to eat good food and have nachas and enjoy it. It's an important thing to be able to do, to realize that the physical world was given to us as a source not only of nourishment. We don't need the physical for the nourishment. The nourishment comes from Hashem. The physical was really given to us for pleasure. But that pleasure has to be used for the Ribbono Shel Olam also. That pleasure has to be used to elevate us. And the time that we do that is on Shabbos. So we see in this Medrash a reconstruction of the whole relationship between man and the world around him. Malacha, work, yes. 6 days we're meant to work. After the sin of Adam, we're meant to toil, not only to work. And that's sad, that's unfortunate, it shouldn't be so. But even before the sin of Adam, we were meant to work creatively. Even before the sin of Adam, we were meant to apply our minds and our intellects to dominating the world and to developing the world and to extracting raw material from the world. We were meant to do that. Of course we're meant to do that as only part of our lives. And another part of our lives needs to be involved in the direct issues of Torah and Avodas Hashem. But part of our lives was meant to be working the world, was meant to be dominating the world. Why? Because in so doing we extract the spirituality from the world. And that nourishes us. a person who is creative, a person who is living creatively, a person who is productive, a person who is contributive, eats less, sleeps less, needs less physical space. Have worked that out yet. The dietitians, they all the way what they go to try and get people to lose weight. It's a very simple thing to get people to lose weight. They start enjoying themselves a little bit more, they'll eat a little bit less. So they start getting true fulfillment. They start really feeling a contribution. If they feel excited and dynamic in what they're doing, they don't need, they go off all the eating, all the junk food automatically they go off. It's a whole lifestyle. That if we're getting the nourishment from the spiritual things of the world, we need less physical. And that's what we do in our work. Come Shabbos, the whole thing switches around. Come Shabbos, the spiritual comes from pure spiritual. But that still doesn't mean a denial of the physical world. On the contrary, now the physical world has a different relationship in altogether. Instead of us having to dominate the physical world on Shabbos, we allow ourselves to enjoy the physical world on Shabbos. Just to sit back and to enjoy the pleasures of that. And for that, for using the world as it's meant to be used, for working during the 6 days as we're meant to work, we're working properly, and as we learned last night with the stories of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoir and the others that we learned, we realized the level of the way they ran their businesses. We saw people who had understood in their businesses that the function of business is not to make money. Money comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. Remember Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoir? He's given to look after a bag full of wheat that of soyrim that doesn't even belong to him, and he spends 7 years investing it. 7 years he manages it. Why doesn't he say bittul Torah? This is a waste of time. Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoir, me, can you imagine how much Torah I could be doing during that time? He doesn't say that. He goes and he plants it and he reaps it and he develops it. And what does he get at the end of it? Not one penny. After 7 years, the owners come back and he says, those 2 bags you left with me, they're not 2 bags anymore. It's a massive company. I had to float the company while you were away as well. We needed capital and so on. This is a massive company. Here you are, here are the share certificates. There's the assets. It's yours. Take it. Belongs to you. So what were you doing all the time? What did he get out of it? He got just as much as he would have got out of it if it was his. Because we don't just work for the money. The money comes from the Ribbono Shel Olam. We have to work because Hashem told us to work. We have to develop the world, we have to plant, we have to reap. That's something Hashem told us to do. And in this case, he had to do it, not for himself, it doesn't matter. In the case of Rabbi Yishmael, with finding the diamond in the neck of the animal that he bought, he says, that's all, I didn't buy a diamond, I bought an animal. And he returns the diamond to the Arab from whom he bought the original animal. And what the meaning of that, the understanding, if a person saw the object of work was to earn money, then you wouldn't sacrifice one opportunity to earn a little bit of money, and we would chap and chap and chap as people do nowadays. That's not what it's all about. The purpose of our 6 days of activities is to find the spiritual in the world, to interrelate with the world in a way that brings out of us the creative element, that brings out of us the godly element, that brings out of us the spiritual element and exercises it, brings it to the surface, brings it from potential into action. That's what we do during the 6 days. And as much time as we have, as much as we're able to, we learn our Torah as many hours of the day as we can. Come Shabbos, the whole thing gets reversed. There the whole day is for spiritual things, and our involvement with the physical is not one to exercise our creativity. Our creativity doesn't need exercising on Shabbos. It gets full exercising in the learning and in the spiritual things that we do. The things that we do on Shabbos are the physical things we do on Shabbos are for the Oneg Shabbos, to be able to enjoy the Shabbos, to be able to look at the world and take pleasure and pride in it and understand its beauty and understand the satisfaction that it's able to provide too within the framework of the Torah. And if we do that, if Sheshes Yomim Tavid, if we work the 6 days with Ne'emonus honestly and correctly according to the way of Torah, and we're productive and we're contributive during the 6 days, and as I said at the Shalashudas today, we're able to ask ourselves at the end of each day, what has the world benefited from me in each of my activities? When I did this today, how did the world benefit? When I did that today, how did the world benefit? In each thing that I did, were people benefiting from me? And come Shabbos, and we're able to indulge in the spiritual and to take pleasure in the physical, then not only do we find that Hashem has given that to us for our own good and that there's pleasure and satisfaction in that, but in addition to that, Ani Moisein Lechol Schar, the Ribbono Shel Olam rewards us for relating to the world in accordance with His will.